welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm Talia Massiri, senior reporter at Infralogic. And today I have the privilege of speaking with Stephen Marshall, chairman at global mission critical infrastructure and real assets investor, Cordiant Capital. Stephen, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks very much, Talia.
So, Stephen, many of our listeners will already be familiar with Cordiant, but for those who perhaps don't, could you start with a quick introduction to yourself and the firm?
Yes, certainly. My name is Stephen Marshall. I'm chairman, founder, and managing partner of Cordiant Digital Infrastructure Manager. 5 years ago, we raised just under £800 million on the London stock market, an investment trust vehicle called Cordiant Digital Infrastructure Limited. And over the last few years, we've invested that money together with some debt at the holdco level. We've invested that money into some really superb assets. We're number one in broadcast and tower infrastructure in the Czech Republic, number one for the same sort of assets in Poland, number one for data centers in Belgium, and number two for fiber optic networks in Ireland. And we also have an internet data center in New York. So really fantastic portfolio, a lot of data centers across those asset classes. And over the last 5 years, we've grown the revenues, grown the EBITDA, and we've generated a greater than 10% internal rate of return over that period of time.
Fantastic. Very impressive. Thanks, Stephen. So as you say, Cordiant obviously invests across the full digital background, looking at towers, fiber, data centers. How does your portfolio perspective shape your approach to data centers, and what synergies do you see between these assets?
We're very, very keen on investment in data centers. We're number one provider of data centers in Belgium, a small geography, but number one provider. And we have that interconnect data center in Manhattan at 60 Hudson, which is probably one of the most interconnected buildings in the world. So when you look at those three data centers, they are actually somewhat synergistic in that we have customers that come into one particular asset class, and that we find that they have interest in some of our other assets in other geographies. And we've seen interest from US customers that talk and work with Hudson Interexchange, the New York data center, that have interest in putting equipment in both Belgium and in the Czech Republic. So these data center assets, and there's a learning in terms of the technology. There's potential to buy with economies of scale across the three data center asset classes, and there is great learning between the management teams of the businesses. So it all really works very well together.
That's fantastic and interesting to hear some of your customers working across those data centers, and you're able to get the full benefits out of those. And I wanted to look at second-tier market. Clearly, the likes of the FLAP-D markets in Tier 1 have really dominated data center development and growth in the last few years. Cordiant obviously hasn't followed the crowd and perhaps is starting its own path in the second-tier market. And what I wanted to know was, what, in your opinion, makes these markets, such as Czech Republic and Belgium, where you have data centers, not just viable but strategic for Cordiant?
Like, I've always taken the view that you need to look ahead to see where the markets are evolving as opposed to where they have come from. Yes, you could buy data center assets in the flat B markets and you would pay very, very high prices for those assets. If you go to peripheral markets that are slightly remote from the primary investment centres, then you get opportunities to acquire similar assets at much more beneficial prices. And actually, when you look at these peripheral markets, you see that that is likely where you're going to see growth in the future. I think you've already alluded to, Talia, the flat D markets are somewhat constrained on power now. And it takes a long time to build new power stations and be able to make more power available in those markets. So as the demand for data center capacity continues to grow, those users have got to look for alternative sites and maybe tether those sites to the flat B markets where they have existing assets by fiber optic and connectivity. But they need to look for peripheral sites. And as you do that, you find that Belgium is, you know, right in the slap bang in the middle of the flat B market. So it's a natural location for people to augment their data center capacity. And as I said, we're number one provider of power and space now, data centers in Belgium. We have 13 data centers across 12 sites. We have contracted power now to more than double the capacity of our sites. So power obviously is important. And we've just given board approval to buy another 70 megawatts of power, which would probably increase the power again by another third. So very much, when you look at Belgium, an absolutely great geographical location to augment the flat D markets. But when you look at CRA as well in the Czech Republic, there is very, very competitive real estate there. We have access to plenty of power. Business has built up 9 edge data facilities now over the last six years. They provided those facilities to government, to corporates, to providers of the internet, to banks, etc. They've built out now, I guess, six or so megawatts. And they're seeing increased demand as people move to these secure data center facilities rather than support the servers internally within their own corporate environment. In that move from corporate environments to proper professionally run data center. But what you're also seeing across Europe, and obviously this applies to the Czech Republic as much as anywhere else, is the increasing need for data sovereignty. Governments are saying, hang on a minute, you know, we have important confidential information here owned by, you know, our various government departments or corporations, you know, major multinationals within the geography. And we're saying we don't want our data, which might be personal to us, residing outside the geography where we have no sort of legal jurisdiction over. So we're actually writing, governments are writing legislation saying certain data we want to be stored locally in our own geography. And of course, that further drives demand for capacity within the Czech Republic and in the data centers that we're looking to develop.
Yes, definitely. I agree. I feel that data sovereignty is definitely not just a buzzword, but certainly an important topic and theme, and that's spreading across markets at the moment. So it would make sense to have centers in those local environments. Stephen, so you mentioned, obviously, kind of you outlined the benefits there of these tier two markets that Cordiant's based in. So looking at the likes of beneficial pricing, good for growth, good for power availability. How can you ensure that you're able to future-proof your portfolio against kind of the constraints that we're seeing at the moment in Tier 1 hub? So, for example, kind of lack of power, cooling troubles, trouble when it comes to land. What are you seeing in these markets?
Well, certainly we have an eye on the future. We're looking to contract more power. We have a lot of availability of contracted power at the moment. So, you know, we've got plenty of capacity and power to support it probably the next 4 or 5 years in the Czech Republic, in Belgium, and indeed in our data center in New York. So I'm not overly concerned about that. I mean, I've just also mentioned that whilst we probably don't need it, we haven't got an immediate need for 70 megawatts of additional power in Belgium. The board has agreed to provide the contractual arrangements to sign up that 17 additional megawatts in Belgium. I think it's about forward thinking, Talia. We're certainly well placed now within the geographies in which we're operating, built to provide both the space and the power, certainly for our next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, fantastic. I can imagine it's very beneficial to be a first mover in those markets, or certainly one of the earlier adopters anyway, before they become populated perhaps. And looking more specifically at your Prague location, this was interesting to hear when we've spoken in the past that Prague Data Centre is being considered by the EU as one of its potential gigafactories for digital capacity. So can you share how this project evolved and what working directly with the Czech government kind of taught Cordiant as a firm, and any learnings from that?
Well, this is really quite an exciting project. The business over the last 5 years has built up its edge data facilities, as I've mentioned. They've built a very credible reputation across the industry for service and support. Originally, they were a broadcast and telecom tower infrastructure business that has evolved in that direction. And actually, our latest project, as you mentioned, is the Prague Gateway. And the Prague Gateway is a vision to build a 26 megawatt state-of-the-art data center on an existing site that we own in the suburbs of Prague that used to house AM radio towers. Now, AM radio is somewhat of an older technology. It's being taken over, of course, by FM radio. It's being taken over increasingly by DAB, digital audio broadcast radio systems. So we have this site, used to house 3 1,000-foot towers providing AM radio signals for a large part of the Czech Republic. We've decommissioned that because of those towers. It already had a substation on site. It already had connected expected power, and it also has some fiber optic connectivity to sites. So we looked at that and we said, well, we're going to need more capacity for our data center franchise, so let's build a 26 megawatt facility. So we've got all the permits. It took us about 2 years to get all the permits from the various government bodies in order to be able to build that facility. We've gone out to tender. Our tender should be coming in for pricing of the shell core and the first data hall in the next 2 weeks. We're actually clearing the land under a separate contract at the moment, so there's actually work happening, and I expect to be approving the budget to press ahead with building out the shell core and first data hall probably in January. And with that facility, we did look at whether, you know, we could potentially upscale that from a 26 megawatt facility to a 100 megawatt facility. So obviously we need more power.
Okay.
We've identified power to be able to double the 26 over the next 2 years from an additional supplier, just fairly in close proximity to the site. So that's partway there. And the government and another provider have said that within a few years, they could actually deliver us over 100 megawatts. So with that, we engaged with the Czech government. We submitted an application to the EU, and it's been very well received. It's been very well received on the basis that it's actually a project that's already in construction, certainly in terms of we're clearing the site, we have the permits, we're out to tender with multinational data center providers to build the facility. And interestingly, I think last week, the Czech Republic government actually made a public announcement saying that we are the only project that they will support for potentially a gigafactory application to the EU. So we are very much tied in partnering with them, and they've been excellent supporters of this initiative. And we're actually engaging with neighbouring countries and also throwing in the lots with us to further bolster our proposal for the European.
Really interesting. Fantastic that the government said that's the only project they'll support. What made them do so? What kind of made this project stand out to them?
I can only guess, Talia.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think, you know, my sense is that we have a great team there, got a great project. It's well planned. It's been been properly developed. It's already under construction, and we have a good reputation, right, for building these edge data centers locally. So I can only assume that I guess it's almost shovel ready. Therefore, it is an obvious thing with the quality of CRA. I mean, CRA is a very attractive place to work. It attracts fantastic talent, and it has, you know, existing very strong government relationships because of the services that it generally provides. So, you know, I can only guess, but I think those are the sort of things that would come to play.
Yeah, makes sense. I guess with this, do you see this becoming a trend? So it's really interesting that you mentioned, so this particular site is being built on an existing and former AM radio tower piece of land. Do you think we'll see more of that? Surely this can't be the only location in Europe and globally. Do you think we'll see more of these sites being converted into and built and renewed into facilities, or what's your view on that?
Oh, certainly. They're clearly options for a data center development. But I guess a lot of these sites would be owned by people that own radio broadcasting, might not have any experience in data center development or any motivation to develop them that way. I guess they could sell them off to people that that might have that interest. I mean, the benefits, of course, of these particular sites is quite often you'll find them close to, you know, main metropolises. AM radio sites are typically very, very tall, so talking about 1,000 feet tall. It's structurally held by guy wires that obviously mean that it's a big site, as the guy wires come down from 1,000 feet up at an angle. You know, obviously, you've got to have quite a large site. And they take a lot of power, so they've probably got a substation on site. There seem to be a lot of characteristics in those type of sites that would attract, would be suitable for a data center development. But
yeah, I wonder if GP listeners will be looking up these sites as potential greenfield opportunities after hearing you speak so fondly and kind of outlining the advantages, I guess, of the CRA sites. And then going on to edge data centers. So Cordiant is obviously exploring edge and remote data applications. And what kind of industries or use cases are you seeing drive this shift for this type of data center?
Well, certainly in the geographies in which we are operating, you know, we're still in the early days of corporates actually recognizing that data is obviously crucial. It's got to be protected. it needs to be outsourced. They're not, you know, the corporates, the banks, the government departments are not experts in the management of data. They don't have specialized facilities. So outsource their servers, move their servers into a specialized facility, data center, professionally managed, which has obviously got, you know, physical security. It's got backup batteries. It's got backup generation power in case the grid goes down. It's got multiple access to multiple fiber feeds in case somebody's fiber connection goes down. It's got sort of fire suppression in the event that there's an accident. So all of these things are important, right, to protect data. And we're still at the very early stages of corporates, governments, local governments actually outsourcing these professional facilities. So that's going to drive demand for capacity for many years to come as we go forward. And then there's the whole data sovereignty issue, which again is also saying to people, well, you've outsourced your data, but we don't actually like the idea that it's held in Germany or it's now, you know, it's held in France or Austria. We want certain critical data. We actually are going to legislate that you have to hold it locally in the Czech Republic or you have to hold it locally in Belgium because we want local jurisdiction over that data. It could be medical, it could be financial, it could be pensions, you know, critical information that you don't want residing outside the country.
Certainly. And how do you see the edge facilities complementing rather than competing with large-scale, the hyperscale data centres?
Oh, yeah, they're totally different segments of the marketplace. You know, we can't open the paper or, you know, some feed on the internet these days without reading about internet providers, you know, investing billions in new data centre, hyperscale data centre facilities, contracting to buy billions of dollars worth of chips. NVIDIA or governments investing in NVIDIA investing in their customers too, so they can afford to buy the chips. I mean, it's all over the press. But that's not the business we're in. If that happens, great. And if people can make money on that, great. I'm sure there's going to be some investments that don't quite work out as planned. But from our perspective, we are playing at the local level. Right? Mm-hmm. We're not investing in the hyperscalers. We're not investing in machine learning, particularly. We're providing power and space to people that need it locally, want access to it. Maybe they want it to be serviced by us as well, but generally it's a local trade. So the question really is there more demand, right? Is there growing demand from that type of customer for the type of asset that we provide? And some people ask me, you know, is all that demand going to be taken by these big investments, these hyperscalers, et cetera? The answer is no. You know, it's a totally different market. If you think about it, and you look back over the last decade, you know, the demand for data center capacity has been growing at high teens. If you look at most research today, it will say it's going to continue growing at high teens. You know, wherever you are, and it's almost intuitive, right? We buy more and more expensive and demanding phones. We work more remotely now. We're talking together on this podcast remotely. We're using access to servers in data centers. We're using fiber optic networks. So it's intuitive that there's more and more demand. And when we talk about all these big investments in machine learning and AI that are being talked about, that's just going to create more demand for local capacity as well. Because take it down to the local level. You know, historically, you and I have, you know, gone on to Google and we've said, what's the UK tax rate? And it's come back with some information. Mm-hmm. And we do more and more of that research all the time. The screen needs more and more data center capacity. It needs more fiber optics and more mobile network capacity as well. But what are we doing now with AI and all of this machine learning? And, you know, at the local level, we're now going into AI and we're not just saying, you know, what are the UK tax rates? We're actually saying, actually, I earn $65,000 a year. You know, I have two kids. I'm married with two kids. I send my Lois to a nursery. What is the amount of tax I will have to pay? Mm-hmm. What is the amount of tax I will have to pay? That is a calculation, right? So we're not asking just to say, you know, what are the marginal tax rates? We're saying, calculate the amount of tax that I have to pay. And that is going to drive not only, you know, high teens digit demand for capacity, it's going to accelerate that even further at the local level across the whole geographies in which we're talking.
Definitely. So there's certainly a need, as you say, we're asking a lot more of AI now and just the internet generally as well. So I guess, as you said, there's space for both. It's not so much a competition between hyperscalers and edge. Interestingly, I saw an article about a trial going on in the UK whereby people are building data centres in their back gardens, in their sheds in their back gardens, and saving themselves a lot when it comes to energy costs. But I think that's a way to go yet. Would you say that when it comes to the investment environment, would you say the kind of investor landscape is quite split? You wouldn't be competing, for example, with manager that invests in hyperscale assets, or is it quite kind of divided in that sense?
No, I think it's a very different investment proposition. I think a lot of investments across the data center piece could do very well, but even historically, there have been some that have not done well. So you've had people that have built data centers remotely and then try to get customers, and they struggle to get customers because they're remote. So there will be winners and losers. There'll be people that make mistakes and a bit too optimistic. So I think you need to understand your market sector, your customers, your typical customers, and then build progressively to meet that requirement. And, you know, if you're going to build a data center for $1 billion or $500 million, then you pretty much better know, you know, who's going to buy it from you, I would say. When we build these edge facilities, which are a megawatt or 2 or 3 megawatts, you know, we're building incrementally. You know, we built our first one, we sold it out, we built the second one, the third, the fourth, you know, we sold them out, and we built, as we're selling that one out, we're building another one. And we're just building our 10 now because we're out of capacity again, right? So we're progressively investing to meet the demands that we're aware of. I mean, obviously, we're investing slightly ahead of, you know, selling the space, but we have a cadence. We know that there's more and more demand, but we're not betting the shop, right? So it's the way that we invest. And, you know, we will invest in equity on that basis, but equally, banks are very keen and see the track record and see the experience, and are willing to provide debt capital to those sort of structures as well. We seem to be willing to provide debt capital to some of these somewhat less convincing propositions. But there we are.
And finally, wanted to kind of dig a little bit deeper and kind of round off on Cordiant's investment approach. So clearly you spoke a lot about building rather than buying data centres. So I guess, how does this influence returns? How does it influence long-term value creation? What are the overall advantages and benefits that you'd on this strategy?
Yeah, it's fundamentally more financially beneficial to build a facility if you have the capabilities and you understand your market and the demand for that capacity within a reasonable time. In respect to a lot of what we've done, actually, we've repurposed existing properties, existing facilities. So a lot of our edge data centers were built out. We repurposed existing buildings at the base of broadcast telecommunication sites, which, you know, already had an existing building. They already had access to power. They already had access to fiber optic connectivity. So obviously that's beneficial and makes it that much more financially attractive. You know, we've talked about Prague Gateway, which is the redevelopment of an AM radio site. So we already had the land. The land was on our balance sheet at zero value. By redeveloping that, we're creating enormous value, right? You know, that land is now land that you would value it based on housing a data center as opposed to being on the balance sheet for zero value. It makes a big difference. And then in New York, we're building out, you know, two new data halls. Again, we haven't bought the facility. Data halls already built out, partially leased up. You're going to pay a multiple of, you know, 20 to 30 times EBITDA, you know, if you buy a facility that's already been built, partially leased out. Whereas if you build it yourself, paying construction cost, which is obviously less than an EBITDA multiple of pretty racing EBITDA multiple.
Fantastic. Build, not buy. Should be Cordiant's new tagline, I feel. And Stephen, to finish off, bit of a lighter question. I guess kind of looking back on everything we've discussed so far and Cordiant's strategy as a whole, if you were to give me a top tips for identifying high-yielding, strong data center opportunities, what would that be?
Buy accordingly. I mean, we're not, clearly we're not a pure data center provider. You know,
it's
part of our portfolio. We obviously have a lot of broadcast towers. We have a lot of telecom towers. We have fiber optic networks. We're number one in most of our markets, apart from number two, where we're in fiber in Ireland. Great businesses, great competitive moats, strong cash flows, growing revenues, growing EBITDA, long-term contracts with blue-chip clients. Combine that at a very attractive, compelling price today on the market as an investment trust. The investment trust sector has suffered a little bit over the last few years. So it's been sort of out of fashion. And as a result of that, the investment trust products are not being fully valued today, generally, not just Cordiant. We fit into the same category. So as you know, Tally, I continue to buy more and more shares in Cordiant Digital because I believe the price is so undervalued and it's a great value proposition for the Marshall Family Trust. So, obviously it's self-serving to say buy Cordiant, but I truly believe that. But you could buy other investment trusts, right, that would give you good upside opportunities. And in the data center world, I mean, there's some big players out there. They're all listed in New York. They're not listed in the UK. But they have the valuations have come off a little bit, but they're still pretty high. So I don't know. I don't know whether they're good investment propositions at the moment. I don't know whether they're going to be overly exposed, these big data center companies. I don't know whether they're going to be overly exposed to AI and the gold rush. Where I think some people will miss investments. So I don't know whether they're great investments. They have been great investments in the past. They may still continue to be great investments in the future, but I wouldn't know personally whether to advise people.
Sure, very helpful. Thank you, Stephen. Well, Stephen, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. So thank you for joining me, and thank you to our audience for listening.
Thank you very much, Talia. Thank you very much.